Well, I'm going to add a name, Ethel.
Ethel.
Say the speaker's statement. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking at an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. I'm still an addict named Ethel. You know, first I need to share that I'm tired and worked all night. And we drove up here from Wilmington, Delaware. And when I was given this topic, you know, I'm speaking in a series of places, and all the topics that I've been given is like lining themselves up to do something, you know, in my life that I have not yet been able to put my hands on, but I know it's going to do something in my life. And this is like the beginning of it. And given the topic, the ugly side of addiction, you know, my mind went racing. I went to, you know, my using, you know, hitting the bottom and all of that kind of thinking, you know. And then as I sat here, and one of the things that I always do is I always ask God to increase so that I can decrease. You know what I mean? I always ask God to come in my life and do for me what I can't do for myself. Not that I share a profound message, but that I share a message that somebody, anybody, gets something out of what I share. You know, and going back to this topic, you know, it talks about in Who's an Addict that we suffer from a disease that expresses itself in ways that are antisociable and that makes detection, diagnosis, and treatment difficult. That's one of the things that I had to get in touch with about this disease, you know, is that when I got to the bottom, my bottom was sitting in a house waiting on a package to come, not being able to, like, want to sit still, had $10 in my pocket, so I decided to go buy me two. Well, the wheel on the lighter flicked off and broke. You know, the pallet on the stove went out. And I found myself on the street with like $1.05, like trying to buy a pack of matches from anybody. And could not get one. Now, the store was a radius of like 6 blocks from where I was at. So I went to the store with the $1.05 in my pocket. Now, you could buy 2 cases of matches for $1.05. You know, but the Subway was right there too. This addict decided January 13th, 1990, to get on the Subway. I haven't found a reason or a purpose or excuse to use anything since. You know, And I share that because that was my bottom. And I don't know about nobody else, but when I looked at this topic just now, and I talked about the ugly side of addiction, I got in touch with that. I wasn't even able. The literature clearly states that it was antisociable and made detect, and that it makes detection, diagnosis, and treatment difficult. I wasn't even able to, like, understand that I was an addict. I wasn't even able to, like, understand that I had a problem. So the ugly side of addiction didn't show up for me until I put the drug down. I wasn't able, like, to look at anything that had went on in my life that said anything to me that I had any problems. I still had a few diamonds. You know, I still had some clothes. And I don't know about nobody else, but I'm the addict that, like, never looked from here up. Whenever I like looked at myself, all I needed to see was that I was sharp. And because that was all I saw, I did not see that I had a problem. I'm so glad that this is a disease that touches three areas of our lives, because like if I didn't know that it was a spiritual part to this disease, me, this addict, would not have gotten here, because the physical part of me said, you all right. The mental part of me, like, couldn't even fathom no idea, like, even thinking about being no addict, because the literature tells you what the addict looked like. Sharpened carts and syringes. That wasn't my story. So I had to, like, fall on the spiritual aspect of this disease. The only thing that I could identify with when I got here was that my spirit was bankrupt. It talks about in there that we put using ahead of our families, husband, wives, loved ones, everybody. Everybody. So all I could get in touch with that, it takes somebody whose spirit is dead to do the things that I was doing. So I was able to come in here and like relate with y'all with the spiritual aspect of this disease. My spirit was dead. How I know my spirit was dead? Because I was able to do the unthinkable to all of those that I said I love. The unthinkable. So anywhere your imagination want to take you, the unthinkable to everybody I said that I love. I remember staying around here a little while longer and doing the things that y'all told me to do, like get a sponsor. You know, I stayed in this process for 3.5 years without a God of my understanding. My sponsor was my third step prayer. She was take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, and show me how to live. I didn't trust God. Everything that I knew about God, I had unbroke all of them commandments, all that dogma that was in me. I had unbroke all of that stuff by the time I got here. So, you know, all I know how to do is they had this cliche out called fake it till you make it. I'm telling you, an addict like me needed to hear that. An addict like me needed to hold on to that, because, like, all I could do was come in here and hear y'all talking about the God of y'all understanding and what God was doing for y'all. And, you know, and I faked it for 3.5 years. I was so scared to get on my knees or to lay in a prostrate position or to do anything in the realm of prayer. Anything outside of serenity prayer was foreign to me. So I got that sponsor, and I asked her to take my will and my life, guide me in my recovery, and show me how to live. And I made a decision the day that I asked her to sponsor me that I don't care what went down the pike, I was never going to lie to her. Like, you ain't got to get along with everybody in here. You ain't got to like everybody in here, but you better grab on to somebody in here. Somebody that you're willing to give all of you to. Because this disease here wants to hold on to all the little secrets. You know, it wants to hold on to all of those things you said, I'd never tell anybody, I'll take it to my grave. Because it festers off of those things. You know, I got in touch with, using a sponsor that I wasn't by myself. You know, I had done a whole lot of things, right? Like, I didn't think nobody else had done, so I wanted to come in here with uniqueness, like I was special, and that kept me sick for a long time. You know, I had a sponsor that, I have the type of sponsor that, you know, when I asked her to sponsor me, the first thing she told me to do was buy a basic text, and then she told me to read it from front to back. And I'm so glad that she did that, because I was showing up in meetings, and as me going in and out of meetings, I was able to identify some of the stuff that I heard because I had read the book from front to back. I don't know about anybody else, but when I'm reading the book, I don't jump in the middle. I don't go from chapter 2 to chapter 3 and back to chapter 1. And as a result of me doing it that way, when I heard some stuff in here, that was the identification that I needed to help me to stay. It might have just been one word that I read, or I remembered that I read in the book and I heard somebody say, just hearing that was enough for me to stay. You're talking about somebody, if I walk down the street with you and you got two steps ahead of me, I turn around and go the other way. I never wanted to feel like I was following anybody. Anybody. Because I didn't grow up with any love or any care, you know, from the time I was like 3 years old, you know what I'm saying? I wanted to be a white woman with blonde hair named Sally Starr. She was my idol. And the reason why she was my idol, because even though I couldn't, I didn't understand the wording. I didn't know what word to put on it. But I remember looking at my brothers and sisters when we used to watch Sally Starr in the morning, and I saw admiration in their eyes. And see, I needed somebody to show me some admiration, to show me some love, some care, some concern, because I'm the child that's like the lightest thing in my family. I had the long wavy hair. Everybody else had short hair. So I was different from the door. I was the white man's baby, the milkman's baby, everybody's baby. You know what I'm saying? So I felt different from the door. So my life went on about like not following anybody. Not caring whether you was my friend or not. I didn't buy friends. I would beat you down and take your money. And I did that because I grew up in an era where light-skinned girls with long hairs got beat up a lot. If you didn't know how to handle your noise from the door, you got your behind whipped. So I decided that that was not going to happen to me because I had already done came from being tied up, being molested, being tortured. I had left that stuff behind me, and I wasn't going to allow that to happen now that I had that drug. That drug told me I was King Kong. It told me that I can do anything. And because of the type of people that I knew and the position that I was in my active addiction, it rang true. You know, I couldn't come in here and identify with the story, and it ain't no different. You know, I know now today that just because the drug dealer was my boyfriend didn't mean that I wasn't tricking. See, I thought it was a difference in the girl who was out there on the corner, because that ain't my story. That ain't my story. I came from kilos. I came back, dropped down to, like, buying my own, and then got even lower to, like, taking yours. That's my story. And I didn't understand any of this type of stuff until after I put down the drug and was able to, like, look back on my life and saw what I had created, and it was a monster. Thank God for step work. You know, after completing that first step, the first part of the first step, because there's two parts to the first step. And admitting that I didn't have any control, you know, that I didn't have any power over this disease. And then learning to understand that I gained power by allowing y'all to know who I am. I gained power by allowing y'all to help me. And then I got to the second part of that first step, the unmanageability. And you know, I wanted to, like, only look at my finances. But what I found out about the second part of that first step is that my emotions was unmanageable. And that was why I used. You know, it wasn't just about the finances and how I wasn't able to hold on to a dollar or I needed to buy something every time I got a penny. It was about me not allowing myself to feel anything because I didn't know how to feel. It, you know, I don't know about nobody else, but, like, it was real difficult for me to go through emotion and not put a name on it. You know, and I didn't know how to do that. Either I was just real happy or I was real angry, you know, and anything in between was, like, foreign to me. And so when I got here and y'all start teaching me about loneliness and empathy and fear and, like, resentment and hate and all of those different things, you know, I didn't really know how to, like, separate my emotions and put the title where it needed to go. So when I got to the second step and I started getting in touch with that, like, the word God wasn't in there but one time. And it was after the suggestion saying that you can call it the group or you can call it God. Now, I had been around and been hearing everybody talking about the second step, and every time somebody shared on the second step, they was talking about the God of their understanding. See, I'm so glad that when I came around here, I had a sponsor that told me, get in here and get an understanding of this thing for yourself. You know, that all she was giving me was her experience, strength, and hope, and everything that came out of her mouth wasn't valid in the end. And as a result of that, and I continued to read this literature, I found out that there were a whole bunch of powers greater than me. And the only way that I can get the help that I need was to be able to identify those different powers. There's a whole lot of different. This chair becomes a power greater than me when I'm tired. Because if I sit in it, I'm going to feel better. You know, so I needed, like, to be able to understand those things. And when I was able to go on to, like, to knowing that it was a void that was left in me after doing that first step, you know, and it needed to be filled with something. I couldn't fill it with the group. Because I ain't trust y'all. And that's where that sponsor came into play at. You know, I didn't use the word trust. I used take a risk. I tell my sponsors, you ain't got to trust me. Take a risk with me. Because one of the things I know about the word risk is it could be like this or it could be like that. You know, that way I don't have no expectations on the outcome of a situation because I'm simply taking a risk. So I did that with my sponsor and we began to build a relationship. And as a result of that relationship, she told me, you know, like I could borrow her God. And she told me some stuff about her God, you know, and I wasn't all together, you know, that willing to like let go of my belief system and what I thought, you know, was best for me. But I was willing to like, again, take a risk. So there were some things happening in my life. You know, I have rare blood, very rare blood. You know, and I got pregnant, and because my blood is rare, you know, my blood was attacking my baby's blood. And I needed to find something. And I remember that day just as clear because, you know, I was also a closet IV abuser. You know, I use new syringes so I don't have any tracks. You know, I didn't use with anybody, so I was able to come and act like I didn't do anything, but I shot crank every 6 hours for almost 9 years. You know, so when I went in that hospital and they needed to get blood from me, and like, I'm talking about the humiliation. Here come the ugly side of my addiction showing up again. I'm talking about turning me upside down, finger in my mouth, blowing hands this way, that way, 27 sticks. But I had to have that intravenous. 27 sticks, the humiliation of being turned upside down on a gurney, and they looking at you like, well, what's the problem? What kind of veins do you got? And me not being able to, like, tell them I'm an addict. Because the shame and the embarrassment didn't want me to let them know that I done shot up all my veins because you can't see any evidence of it on my skin, on my outer skin. Ain't nothing in there. Ain't nothing in there. You know, and having to, like, allow somebody, like, to go in my chest. And I'm talking about finding some joy in that. The ugly side of my addiction showing up every time I go in the hospital. I'd be like, you got to do a central line on me. And I go around and I say things like, you know, it runs in my family. We all got tiny veins. And they believe me. They believe me. You know, I remember, like, being in there and just saying, please, you know, calling on this God that my sponsor had talked about and just, like, saying, please help me. And I didn't know how to say help me do what. Just help me. And I remember after the third try, if anybody ever had a central line in their chest, you know how dangerous it is. And for somebody to have to go 3 times in your chest. And it was just ironic that after the third time, it was all about the third step. It's about making the decision to allow that God in my life. Ooh. You know, I hadn't talked about that in a long time. I've been clean 16 years, and I don't ever remember talking about that. You know, you try to plan what it is you're going to say, and then you get up here and you ask God to do something for you, and then when he do it, you be like, hold up, that ain't what I want to talk about. You know what I mean? That is not what I want to talk about. You know, I want to talk about some other stuff. You know, and he brings about that kind of stuff because I need a jolt. I don't know about nobody else. The ugly side of my addiction continues to show up. It shows up in relationships with people. It shows up in intimate relationships, how I continue like to keep going back. Because in my addiction, I didn't have a boyfriend. I bought sex. You know, and how I brought that ugliness right into my personal recovery and how, like, I'm always winding up with these guys who I buy. I'm always dressing them up. You need to have jewelry. You know, you know the newcomer package, you know, I need to do that. You know what I'm saying? And it gives me that control that I need to have. You know what I mean? And then I continue like to work myself in this vicious cycle with these relationships, knowing that I'm not happy. You know, I like it when I'm in control, but then I want you to like try to take some control so that I can stop you from trying to take control. You know what I mean? So, and that's just who I am. You know, I want you to think like you got it. Right up until you do something I don't like. You know, I paint this pretty picture and I dress them up the way that I like them to look, and then they wind up getting sponsors and shit, and then I'm fucked up. You know what I mean? I'm all jammed up after that because they ain't doing my program no more. They ain't doing shit my way no more. You know, and then I don't know about nobody else, I start dissecting them then. Their clothes don't look right. You know, their shoes too big. That same mouth I've been kissing for like a year or so don't look good to me anymore. You know what I mean? And I don't like the way they comb their hair. You know, and then I start doing stuff. Because I'm still a coward. I'm still incapable of just saying, you know what? You ain't what I want. Because I'm talking about getting so comfortable, that six-step working in my life, I'm getting so comfortable with that distorted, you know, security, getting so comfortable with that thing because I need to have you right here. It don't matter that this my pillow you didn't. It don't matter that that's my mattress that you making the crease in. It don't matter that you like washing your clothes on my washing machine and turning on my light and flicking my remote control, as long as you just be here. And that ain't nothing like that old ugly side of the addiction, that part of my addiction where my father didn't show up and he wasn't doing what he needed to do. So I don't have a point of reference. My brothers, I wouldn't wish on nobody. There's no point of reference for me. Y'all tell me I need to come in here and get one man, one God, one fellowship, one home group, and all of these ones and shit, and they ain't giving me no guidelines. You know what I'm saying? Ain't nobody giving me no guidelines, nothing to go by. So all I got in reference is the ugly side of my addiction. And then, you know, I'm the addict that came in here and sat around like, just read and listen to what y'all said about y'all stories and try to relate some of that stuff to myself and only find myself in all kinds of damn pain because what I forgot is like, your journey is your journey. And just because your story was like similar to mine don't mean that the outcome was going to be the same. So now I'm all jammed up because I done identified with your story and I done believe that, like, that's for me. But, like, even though, you know, we all in here, they talk about in literature us being thrust, you know what I'm saying, in here. So even though we all in here like that, but the bottom line is that the outcome ain't always the same for everybody. What worked for you don't necessarily work for me. So how I need not to get caught up. And just because you said something that sounds familiar to me, that I need to, like, hook up. I've learned through this process that it's real important that, like, I get myself in a position where, like, I choose who I want in my circle. Now, I don't limit myself to help, but I choose who I want in my circle. Everybody can't hang with me. I don't want to hang with everybody. But I show up for you because I expect you to show up for me. You know, and you know, it talks about in the sixth step, right? You know, for a long time, I was, like, real stuck on believing, like, that my character defects, like, couldn't go anywhere. Because I was locked down in this belief that the literature was saying that only God could remove the character defect. And because, like, I didn't really have the relationship that, like, I needed with him, I was stuck. See, I believe that character defects are anything that is fueled by anger, resentment, and fear. I believe that whenever I'm going through a situation, I need to be able to identify where I'm at in the here and now. Am I dealing with anger? Am I dealing with resentment? Am I dealing with fear? Am I dealing with my past? Am I dealing with the present? Or am I dealing with the future? And the reason why I have to line it up like that, because it says right there in the sixth step, it said we pray or otherwise become willing, ready, and able to let God remove these destructive traits. The word otherwise, I missed it for like 15 years. Just got revelation as a direct result of me. This book is my life. I've had it since I got clean at 16 years old. And I just saw that a year ago. The word otherwise. That I had a choice. And what otherwise simply meant for me is that I needed to practice change. Practice change. I could go to the God of my understanding and identify the character defect that I'm dealing with. But how about I need to practice change? And the only time that I might need to surrender to a character defect is that if I can't do nothing about it. And I need to be, like, totally honest with myself and admitting that I can't. See, I don't know about nobody else, but I didn't come into this process to, like, throw all my weight on the God of my understanding. I didn't come into this process, like, to throw all my weight on y'all. I came in here, like, to stand up and enjoy this thing called freedom. And then they told me that I can't make a good decision on a consistent basis, but I do know how to make some. When I get honest with me. And it ain't real easy on a lot of days because I'm still an addict that, like, done told myself something so long till I, like, really struggle sometimes and, like, wondering what part of it is the truth and what part ain't. Because, look, this is my voice. I trust it. It's mine. I believe it. I believe that I wouldn't tell me anything that's going to harm me. So when I hear myself say something, sometimes I'm questioning it. Because I done said it so long, I actually believe it to be true. And then I'm sitting down there trying to figure out, well, when was that situation, you know, when did that situation take place? And that's how I usually get to the level of honesty. Because if I can't remember when the situation took place, 9 times out of 10, the shit ain't happened. 9 times out of 10, it didn't happen. You know? So when I get in touch with, like, the ugly side of addiction, I get in touch with that. I wouldn't have seen any of it if I didn't apply myself to this program. It talks about, and we do recover that, the steps become a part of your life from day one. From day one. You know, that I can run around here and ask myself these questions if I want. You know, am I an addict? Do I belong here? Or, you know, or am I suffering from anything, from a disease called addiction? I can run around and ask myself those questions if I want. I can come in this program. Literature also talks about we can make meetings and stay clean. But if you want this new way of life, you need to apply the steps. Why would you come into a 12-step program and not work the 12 steps? They talk about it, and we do recover. You know, a lot of times we hear that old cliche, this is a program of suggestion. And we do recover. It tells you that you need to follow directions, is what it says. It says that we need to follow directions. Anything anybody ever suggested to me gave me too many options. Too many options. You know, I don't need anybody dictating to me. I don't need anybody telling me that I need to do this step when I need to do this step. I do them when I do them. I don't know about nobody else, but it was a joy for me to have gone from 1 through 12 my first year. It didn't matter whether I had an understanding of them because I wasn't graduating. I was only going right back to one. What happened as a result of me doing them all in that first year, I had a point of reference. I don't know about nobody else, but anything that goes on in my life, if I don't have a point of reference, I will crash into a wall. So I needed to be able to look at that first set of 12 steps that I went to in order to, like, weigh it against the second time I went through the steps. Now, I've been through them four times. I've done 5/4 steps. Because I don't always need to do them over and over. Sometimes I'm in an area where I just need to go straight to 4. I just need to, like, do myself a checkup from the neck up. But it don't happen if I don't apply these steps. It just don't happen. You know, I'm real sick of people coming around here with a whole bunch of clean time, raising their hands, standing and meeting that old bullshitting-ass fantasy that it's all right, that they all happy, joyous, and free, and they ain't never did a damn step. How would you know what freedom is until you start doing the steps? All you did was find some change in your life. You put the drug down, and now you're still fucking crazy. You might enjoy some periods of having some good things and getting some cars and homes and jewelry and all that old good shit, but this ain't a program of things. I just wanted to be able to, like, put a name on a feeling. That's what I wanted to do. And I couldn't do that without doing these steps. So I encourage you that if you're in here, steps are the key to freedom. You know, you don't have a sponsor, get one. I suggest that you find somebody that shows up in meetings. You need to ask questions today. Do you have a sponsor? Do your sponsor have a sponsor? And do they work the steps? You need to ask those questions. You know, don't come in here because you hear somebody sharing something familiar to yours, you know, to your addiction. You know, and think that that's the perfect sponsor for you. What has proven itself true to me is that if they need to have something that I want. And it ain't nothing that I see. They need to have something that I want, that I feel in here. And it sure as hell wasn't going to be anybody that was like me. Sure as hell not anybody like me. And I see it happen all the time, you know, the newcomer thinking that they need to find somebody who dressed like them or got jewelry like them or smell like them or get down like them or whatever and wind up lost. You know, I just need to share that sponsorship is an honor and it's a privilege. I was, you know, riding down here with my friend, and I was talking about how sponsorship is almost like a godlike position. Because who else do you ask to take your will in your life, guide you in your recovery, show you how to live, but God? So when you come in here and you ask another individual to do that, then you need to have something. They need to have something that's going to help you feel. Not what they carry and not what they got. So I just ask, you know, that if you're sponsoring somebody, sponsor in the spirit of sponsorship. You know, understand that you got somebody's life in the palm of your hands because they're taking the risk with you, you know, hoping that you'll help them to get what you got another day. If ain't nobody told y'all they love y'all, they need y'all, ain't nothing without y'all, it's Attic Name Nothing. Thanks for letting me share.
Thanks for sharing. I'd like to introduce our second speaker, Greg.
I'm Greg, I'm an addict.
Hi, Greg.
Speaker statement. The NA member chosen to speak at a meeting needs to be someone who is working and living the NA program of recovery, which are the 12 steps and 12 traditions. In areas where there is not an abundance of NA members with substantial clean time or experience with the 12 steps and 12 traditions, there is the possibility that a group inexperienced in Narcotics Anonymous may misunderstand NA traditions and invite speakers from outside the NA fellowship. There are several ways to avoid this situation. Our basic text, for instance, reminds us that NA members from other areas are willing to drive long distances to support new groups. The speaker helps fulfill the group's primary purpose, carrying the message of recovery to the addict who still suffers. When speaking in an NA meeting, we should be careful to deliver a clear message of recovery by identifying ourselves as addicts recovering from the disease of addiction. It is not necessary to dwell excessively on our active addiction or war stories, because we all know what it was like to use. We came to Narcotics Anonymous to stop using, and we are here to share our experience, strength, and hope of recovery. I'm Greg. I'm an addict. First, you know, I'd like to thank the convention committee for giving me an opportunity to give back to the program, you know, to save my life. You know, the ugly side of addiction is a really good topic, and I tried to make a real effort to not, for the last few weeks, you know, sit around and think of what I was going to talk about or write an essay of what I was going to say. But still, you know, I couldn't help but run a lot of things through my mind over the last few weeks. And the ugly side of addiction has a lot of meanings to me, you know, as far as in my past and in recovery. Because, you know, just because I put the drugs down and get clean, and even though I've worked steps, you know, it doesn't mean that my addiction doesn't have an ugly side, and it doesn't rear its ugly face and affect every area of my life clean in recovery. I will try to share more about recovery because I do believe in sharing about, you know, how to live and how the steps work in my life and not that much of how to use, because I think we all know how to do that. I'll briefly share a little bit of my story. You know, I used a lot. It got really bad for me. It got really ugly. And when I came to the program of Narcotics Anonymous, you know, when I was first introduced to the program, you know, I went to a treatment facility for the simple fact I had a court date coming up again, and, you know, I wanted to do whatever I had to get out of it. And, you know, some people in H&I came up and spoke, and, you know, something drew me to the program. And instead of going back home from that facility, I ended up moving to an area and into a recovery house and got semi-involved in recovery, and then I immediately jumped into a relationship with someone that was employed at the treatment facility, and my priorities weren't staying clean anymore. You know, I thought I had everything going for me, you know, thought everything was okay, and it didn't take long for my disease to rear its ugly head. And, you know, eventually I picked up, and, you know, they say when you go back out it gets worse. I know for a fact that it does, because within 48 hours of picking up, I lost it all. I was homeless again. I had lost the few friends that I had made. The few relationships I had were absolved. And I was sitting in the detention center in Frederick County. And, you know, when I was in that detention center, that's when I hit my bottom, you know. I lost someone that raised me as a child and was extremely close to me. And, you know, the feeling of being locked up and not being able to be there for my family and just all the pain that I had caused in my life, you know, it got to the point, you know, I knew everything that I'd done in my past. I knew that my disease had destroyed my life, and, you know, I didn't want to live that way anymore. And, you know, when I came back to the program, you know, I didn't relapse, because you got to be working steps, you got to be in recovery, you know, before you can relapse. Just because you're coming around here and going to a couple meetings doesn't qualify as being in recovery. And I believe there's a big difference between being clean and being in recovery. When I came back to the program in Narcotics Anonymous, I was thoroughly beaten down. I mean, the disease had beaten me down to a point that I was willing to do whatever was necessary to stay clean. And all the suggestions I ignored the first time around, you know, I was willing to do. You know, I went to a lot of meetings. I found a sponsor. I prayed. I did just about everything that was suggested to me. I mean, not everything. You know, there's times where I have to learn from my mistakes in recovery, and I had to touch the stove a couple times before I knew it was hot. But, you know, I worked really hard, and I think back to my first year clean, and, you know, it was a lot of work, but I had a lot of fun my first year clean, too, you know. You know, I learned how to live, and I got to experience life, you know, without everything being blurred with the chemicals that I put in myself. And, you know, this program is just, I mean, it's given me life. And, you know, like our basic text talks about, you know, trying everything else. I've tried everything other than Narcotics Anonymous, you know, in the past to try to stop using. And, you know, everything failed, you know. I've been to psychiatrists. I've been to church. I've been to recovery houses. I've gotten in relationships. I mean, everything that literature lists, I've tried, and it all failed for me. And the only thing that has ever worked for me is Narcotics Anonymous. And I'm a big believer in the 12 steps of Narcotics Anonymous. I think the healing starts with the first step. And the steps don't stop at one. You know, that's where they start. And, you know, I felt like, you know, the second time around, you know, my first sponsor I had when I first came around before I went back out and did my thing, you know, didn't have any experience with any steps. And it was somebody that I'd actually used in the past, and they had accumulated a couple years clean. And I asked them to sponsor me. And I asked them, you know, I said, have you ever worked any steps? And they told me, nah, but we'll go through them together. And I wouldn't suggest that for anybody. And it didn't work for me. And, you know, the things I've done in my past, the choices I've made in my life in recovery, you know, I can't blame anybody else, you know. It was my responsibility to find a sponsor the first time around, you know. It was my choice to get into a relationship and put that over my priority recovery. You know, they told me early, you know, my recovery is my responsibility. And it's just as much my responsibility today as it was when I first walked in them doors, you know. I can't rely on somebody to come force-feed recovery to me. You know, my recovery is my responsibility, and I need to chase it. And when I looked for a sponsor when I came back, you know, I looked for somebody that I felt was living the program and somebody that was working steps. And you know, like Ethel was saying, somebody that was living this program in their life and someone that I could see had something I wanted other than just physical things. And, you know, I still have that same sponsor today almost 6 years later. And, you know, I feel like I've been really lucky because now, you know, other than my sponsor, he's one of my very best friends. And, you know, my sponsor's not afraid to pull me up, you know. If the ugly side of my addiction's showing, you know, he'll be one of the first ones to let me know. And he's one of the few people that can do that, and I won't get offended. And that's because I respect his opinion, you know. I know how he lives his life, and I know his motives, and I know that, you know, it's in a loving, caring way that he's telling me, even if it is, you know, jumping up in my face and telling me, hey, you know, you're acting like an ass or whatever it may be. You know, I have people in my life today that I respect, and I respect their opinion. And even with some clean time, even working through the steps once, now I'm going through them for the second time, you know, the ugly side of addiction can still rear its ugly head. You know, I don't try to, you know, portray the message that just because I come around here and I've worked some steps that I'm some guru and, you know, I'm not sick. Look, I have some clean time and I've worked some steps, but I'm still really sick and I've got a lot of work to do. And at the same time, I don't use the program to justify and rationalize my bullshit. I don't come in here and say it's a process, you know, I'm working on it, you know. You know what, when's the process going to start? When am I going to start working on it, you know? I need to have one of the first things my sponsor taught me when I came around here and worked the first step was about awareness. And being aware that I had the disease of addiction. And being aware of when my disease is active. And being aware of situations I put myself in. And, you know, today I'm completely aware that I'm an addict. And I don't put myself in situations that are going to be, you know, put my recovery at risk. There was somebody that came around my area who's no longer around who used to say you only get screwed if you assume the position. And today I choose not to assume the position. And I'm not willing to give up what I've gained in my life today through this program, you know. I mean, my life is beyond my wildest dreams. I mean, I met my wife in recovery. My best friends that I have today are in recovery. And, I mean, I'm living and enjoying life, you know. I'm actually enjoying life for what it's worth without, you know, clouding my mind with drugs and chemicals. And, you know, the ugly side of addiction for me can just, I mean, it can come out in so many ways, whether it can be through anger, you know, resentment, you know, my fear. You know, lately there's things in my life that I really, really want, and, you know, I haven't gotten them yet. And, you know, when it comes to patience and tolerance, there are things that I struggle with. And, you know, lately I've been a little more bitter than usual and a little angry. I mean, I've been angry at the God of my understanding, you know. But, you know, I do have people in the program that are there for me, whatever I go through, and people that I trust with my life. And, you know, in recovery, working some steps, you know, the steps that stick out to me when it comes to the ugly side of addiction is, you know, I think about the fourth step and working the fourth step. And in the fourth step, I see a lot of the ugly side of my addiction back when I was using. And then when I get into the sixth and seventh step, you know, it shows me the ugly side of addiction clean in recovery. And when I worked my sixth and seventh step, it brought me to my knees. When I found out that I had been clean for a while, I had been working steps, you know, I had been doing everything that was suggested and putting in all this work for my recovery, then I found out I'm still this messed up and still have all these liabilities. Man, that was hard for me to accept. But, you know, thank God, it, as well as all my liabilities, you know, when I got to the end of my fourth step, you know, it was important that in the workbook, you know, it mentioned about assets. You know, because I have assets too. You know, yeah, I have a lot of liabilities, but I also have a lot of assets. And I don't know. I mean, if you're new in this program, give it a chance. But don't expect anybody to force you to stay clean or do the work you need to do. I mean, and I'm not the type of person to force anybody to do anything. People need to make their own choices and come to their own conclusions and their own decisions of what they want to do with their life and whether they want to stay clean. And if anybody came to me for guidance, I would, you know, do anything in my power to help somebody. But, you know, I think people need to come to conclusions for themselves what they want to do with their life. And, you know, recovery, just because you get clean and you get some clean time, you might get a good job and this and that and whatever you may gain through recovery, you know, doesn't mean that life doesn't get tough, you know. Life doesn't become a bowl of cherries and life doesn't stop just because I get clean. There's a lot of things in life that are tough, you know. You know, I heard a speaker say a few years back something that really sticks out to me, you know, just as much today as when I heard it. And he said something about feelings and emotions, what I have the most of and know the least about. And, you know, sometimes I can get so consumed with my feelings and emotions. But like I said, I'm just so grateful for the program and the people I have in the program today. I can't say enough about the steps, you know. I think about the way I was living when I was using and the ugly side of addiction as far as that. You know, I never want to return to that way of life. And, you know, that's why I still do the work that I need to do, you know. I'm not going to sit up here and say I'm as vigilant as I was when I first came around here in Green, but, you know, I stay involved with my recovery. You know, I talk to my sponsor every couple days. I have a home group. I'll regularly go to meetings. I have a sponsor. I have a network. I'm not doing as much service as I did at one time, but, you know, I still stay involved in my recovery, and I'm very aware of what will happen if I veer away from Narcotics Anonymous in the program. You know, the ugly side of addiction, inactive addiction, you know, had me thinking that living in a tree fort that I roughed off from some young kids in my neighborhood back home was okay, you know, and I was comfortable with that. And, you know, the ugly side of addiction had me thinking, you know, it was okay as long as, you know, I could find something to eat or, you know, stay warm for the night. And, You know, I had to be thoroughly beaten when I came to this program. And I don't know. I just think about my past, you know. I think about the present. And, you know, my life's not where I want it to be, but it's a hell of a lot better than it was. And it's only because of the program of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, I don't like to sit up here and start thinking because I don't want to start talking some nonsense. But I believe strongly in sharing from my heart, you know, and sharing my experience with Narcotics Anonymous in the program. And I don't believe coming in here and sharing that, you know, everything's well and everything's always okay, and then going home and living dirty, you know, and the same things I'm saying are okay. For me, I try to practice the program in my life. And, you know, I have beliefs that I believe very strongly in. And, you know, I believe that I'm a person today that knows something about loyalty. And, you know, there's one asset that I can say is if you're my friend, if you're my family and you're close to me, you know, I'll go to war for you. You know, I struggle with being judgmental in this program, you know. You know, they say not to take other people's inventory, but I found out that, you know what, if I'm going to be associating with somebody, I want to know what kind of life they're living. And I want to know the people I'm associating with. Because, you know, that's my recovery at stake, too, you know. If I'm hanging around some foul people, then sooner or later, you know, I'm basically assuming the position, and you know what happens when you assume the position. You know, I've got people in my life that, you know, that are as important to me as my family, and they practically are my family. And, you know, it's through this program. I mean, I love the program Narcotics Anonymous. And like I said about being judgmental, you know, I struggle sometimes with some people in Narcotics Anonymous. But, you know, that doesn't change my view of Narcotics Anonymous, you know. And I need to realize that, you know, the only requirement for membership is the desire to stop using. And, you know, my sponsor's really been pushing to me lately to really get into the traditions. And I'm really trying to make an effort to get into the traditions more. You know, I've been through the traditions, and I have an understanding of the traditions, but I really need to get a deeper understanding of them. Because the traditions are just as important as the steps in this program. And, I don't know, you know, this convention, you know, I remember coming to when I had 6 months clean, and, you know, I've been back every year since, and I've really loved this convention. And every time I come to this convention, you know, I get something out of it. And I don't know. I really don't want to mumble and babble and start taking hostages. So I'm just going to end it there and say that, you know, I love this program. You know, if you want what this program has to offer, you know, like the reading says, if you want what this program has to offer and are willing to make the effort to get it, and there's a couple words that stick out to me, you know, the willingness and the effort, because it takes work. I mean, recovery just doesn't happen, you know. It does take work. But, you know, if you're willing to do the work, you know, a lot of beautiful things can come along with this program. And I'm very grateful to be here. Thanks for letting me share. Thank you.